ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Communities across southeast Queensland are cleaning up following destructive hailstorms that struck over the weekend. Properties are damaged and without power, and wildlife has been left injured by tennis ball-sized hail. We'll head there shortly. And it's been almost 20 years since Ken Gourlay became the fastest Australian to sail solo, non-stop and unassisted around the world. Now, his son is aiming to break the record.
It's 50% sailing, 50% psychological. Now, Tristan can certainly sail the course. There's no problem. He has the skills, he has the ability, so he can certainly sail the course. And I believe he's got that wish to do it as well, which will carry him through probably the harder or the lonelier times.
I'm Alex Hyman, and this is Australia Wide. More than 2,500 insurance claims have been lodged after parts of Queensland's south and southeast were lashed by giant hail over the weekend. The storms caused widespread damage and injuries, with tennis ball-sized hailstones tearing through cars and homes, smashing solar panels, with at least four people hospitalised. In Clifton, halfway between Toowoomba and Warwick, Karen Finney said there hadn't been much warning prior to the storm hitting with a bang on her roof. And that's when hailstones, the size of tennis balls, started coming in fast.
I suppose ping pong ball, tennis ball size, some of them, depending. But yeah, it was coming in very fast. And just started going through the windows at the back here in the dining room. Had to get all the cats inside, of course. I was a bit worried about the roof, which has started to peel up a bit, but it's not too bad. We just have to get that fixed.
You said the hail came through the window like bullets. Did you have to take shelter in the bathroom or anything like that?
No, we shut the dining room door and closed that off, and we didn't go in there because it was coming through so fast it was hitting the wall on the other side. And a few things got damaged, so we just closed it off and left it shut because there's glass flying everywhere.
Have you seen a storm this big in a while?
No, I've never seen hail this big here in Clifton while I've been here.
That's Clifton resident Karen Finney speaking to our reporter Grace Nakamura. The storms haven't spared wildlife, as Jade Gilchrist discovered in Pratton when the calls started coming in. Jade is a former wildlife carer who jumped back into action. Her home now resembles an aviary after becoming a drop-off centre for injured birds found throughout southern Queensland.
Well, I have been a wildlife carer before in the past, and I think when we started getting contacted by our neighbours saying that got injured animals, and it was like, okay, you'll need to take them to the vet. And then the next door neighbour behind us had two injured animals, so I realised that it was quite widespread, obviously, because of the storm, the injury to wildlife. So I just jumped online and on Pratton Post and found more people with injured animals wanting to know what to do with them. So basically I just said, okay, come here, bring them all here, or if you can't get here because your vehicles are damaged, we'll come to you and just use this as a hub. And then I reached out to as many wildlife organisations as I could till I found someone who could come and pick them up for us.
And so what sort of injuries did they have? Is it mainly from the hail?
Oh, absolutely. It's been catastrophic. I mean, they've looked like they've either been shot because of the hail, the way it's just slammed into them, or have been hit by cars. It's just so immensely damaging to birds and any animals who are being caught out into it. So, yeah, it's been really quite confronting. It's been a few tears. We've lost some of our own pets as well. So rather than dwell on that, we felt that at least we could help the wildlife and remove some of that stress from our community to have to be trying to deal with this. At least that took us, our mind off what was happening. But we have got some that, like this little fella, we found him. He'd actually been bopped on the head on one side and his eye was actually like almost hanging out of his head with a little bit of rest and some TLC. He's actually doing really well, so we're probably going to be releasing him because he's got all his faculties, he's eating and drinking, so he's good to go.
And you've got a few more in here.
Yeah.
Mind showing us?
We had someone who dropped in a couple of more animals. Luckily, they're Corella. Again, some of them with the mild concussion. With a night of, you know, cage rest, it's been come good. They're really bright. They don't have any injuries. So it's more a case of we'll take them back, see if they're, you know, going to go up to their tree with their mate. Because a lot, unfortunately, being spring, we've got a lot of birds in nests. So if their parents are injured, they're not necessarily going to get that help. So it's really hard.
Yeah. And you've got a few more in here.
Yes.
Do you mind showing us?
So we've got cockatoo. He's unfortunately not looking good at all. He looks like he's had some kind of head strike and on the back as well. Then we've got in that box, we have a galah that's got a severe wing strike. And what's in the other galah?
The other box is another galah as well, and the small box is a rosella.
A lot of them is broken wings.
Yeah.
If anyone does find an injured animal, you know, or a bird, the best thing to do is throw a blanket or a sheet over them and pop them gently into a box with some holes in it. Try not to handle the animal too much. Write down the address in which it was found, the type of animal, and what, if any, injuries you've been able to see in that process, and contact your local wildlife for collection. So I think, you know, that is the best thing to do in this situation.
That's Jade Gilchrist speaking to Grace Nakamura in Pratton, near Warwick, on Queensland's Southern Downs.
ABC Australia Wide.
And you are with me, Alex Hyman. It's great to have your company here on Australia Wide. Let's head to the Northern Territory now. A federal government agency has dialed back support for a women's shelter in the remote Northern Territory community of Gapawiyak, 2 years after it moved to repurpose what is now a vacant building. In 2023, the Federal National Indigenous Australians Agency said it was working closely with the Northern Land Council to try and repurpose its Gapawiyak office as crisis accommodation for women and children escaping domestic violence. That work appears to have stalled, with the Aboriginal-led Domestic Violence Support Service now calling for answers. Darwin reporter Oliver Chaseling has this story.
Over the 15 years that we've been operating, we are proud that we are the only safe space in Arnhem Land that's locally Yolngu led and is based on our Puruto system.
Bettina Dunganbar founded the Galawinku Women's Space in 2010 after taking a woman fleeing her violent partner into her own home and discovering firsthand the need for a dedicated local women's shelter with Yolngu law at its heart.
Burutu is our kingship system that governs us as Yolngu people. It's a kingship system, how we relate to each other in the community. And our Yolngu kinship covers East Arnhem Land, so through that Puruto, we can relate to people from Lake Ibella, Irkala, Milingimbi. It's a system that connects us to each other.
In 2022, Galawinku celebrated the opening of its women's shelter after years of providing respite, case management and well-being programs to victim survivors of domestic violence. It was also that year that the Women's Space began expanding its services to the nearby Yolngu community of Lake Ivala or Gapawiyak.
They heard about us and how well we are running our service in Galawinku, so the women reached out to us in Galawinku. So, yeah, we started that connection, and so at the moment we don't have a space in Gapawiyak. We are supporting them from Galawinku, and our funding is used for that.
Galawinku Women's Space is 80% funded by private donations, which covers the wages for its staff in Gapawiyak, case manager Tracy Simmons and caseworker Ruthie Guyala. Ms. Guyala says the pair provides support to around 80 women in Gapawiyak, from teens to elders, from a tiny converted shipping container in the middle of town.
We actually help and support nearly with everything up here. We support our clients with housing application, centreling support, We're very connected with local police. We work together.
As the Gapawiak Women's Centre got off the ground in 2022, the National Indigenous Australians Agency, who lease a complex of workers' accommodation nearby from the local Aboriginal Land Trust, in 2023 began working towards repurposing the complex as crisis accommodation, similar to that established in Galawinku. In a series of emails seen by the ABC, senior staff told the Galawinku Women's Space they were working closely with the Northern Land Council, as holders of the land trust, to get the necessary sign-offs for a sublease. The federal agency told the ABC in April 2023 that they supported the proposed sublease, but that the NLC would need to consult with traditional owners for GWS to utilise the premises. Since then, for Galawinku Women's Space General Manager Faith McCombe, the trail towards a Gapawiak shelter has gone cold.
We can't even get anyone from NLC to call us back or email us back. We've been chasing the Section 19 team, especially from Darwin. No response, no emails, no anything for the past 2.5 years.
Enthusiasm from the National Indigenous Australians Agency also appears to have cooled. Last week, the ABC put a series of questions to the agency asking them to confirm their ongoing support and engagement with the NLC for a women's shelter at their Gapawiak complex. Those questions went unanswered, with a spokesperson instead saying that its lease expires in April 2028 and that its use after that was a matter for the Land Council. The agency said the complex, which includes a common area, bedrooms and a kitchen, was most recently used in July this year by Australian Defence Force personnel constructing a local store and arts centre. Meanwhile, in Gapawiak, Ruthie Guila says women in violent relationships aren't seeking help for fear of being flown out to the nearest shelters in Galawinku or Nhulunbuy.
I'm experiencing things up here and it's escalating more. Actually, it's infecting friends and family in the community. That's why we need shelter to base in Gapawiak. The Yolngu ladies are saying they wanted to have a shelter in Gapawiak because they don't feel confident to leave their country, to leave their family.
Faced with a years-long wait for a Gapawiak shelter, Bettina Dunganbar has called on the federal government and Northern Land Council to shed some light on where the project is at and prioritise community-led solutions to domestic, sexual and family violence.
Please, walk with us, work with us. We're working for our community.
The Northern Land Council did not respond to questions.
That story from Darwin reporter Oliver Chaseling. When a Royal Australian Air Force veteran moved to a regional Victorian town for a tree change, his wife soon started to develop early onset dementia, making her aggressive and unable to care for herself. Ray Sullivan soon became suicidal, overwhelmed with caring for his wife by himself and trying to traverse an ineffective healthcare system. But he found companionship and support at the local RSL, who were able to bring him out of his darkness. Ballarat reporter Charlotte Wilkes has this story.
After veteran Ray Sullivan's wife, Mitsu or Mickey Sullivan, was formally diagnosed with early onset dementia in 2023, Ray's life changed forever. Left to care for Mickey by himself in the new regional town of Ararat, Ray watched as the disease slowly destroyed her memory, all while struggling to navigate the healthcare system. Isolated and anxious about his wife's health, Ray became suicidal.
Yeah, it's been hard. I was confined to home myself and, you know, didn't have much else to do besides think about my wife's well-being.
Ray met Mickey after he completed his 9-year apprenticeship with the Royal Australian Air Force. At age 20, Ray was posted to the Butterworth Air Force Base in Penang, Malaysia, where he realised his dream was to study and travel. He enrolled in a Japanese language course at Macquarie University before travelling to Chiba in Japan to work as an English teacher.
My wife was working in the bank very close to the English school where I was. It didn't work out initially, but being persistent, I came back and asked her for a date again, and she said yes. There's a word in Japanese that they use, but a very down-to-earth type of Japanese. A real genuine type of person.
After marrying and having two children together, the family lived in Japan until their sons were older. When their children graduated from university, they decided to move to Ararat for a slower lifestyle. That's when things started to change for Ray and Mickey. Ray said Mickey had always been brilliant with maths and numbers, but he began to see she was having trouble with even basic calculations.
She got a diagnosis over there that she had Alzheimer's. So that sort of weighed heavily on my mind.
As Mickey's disease developed, so did her aggression, and it was no longer safe for Ray to live with his wife. Being under the age of 65, Mickey is not eligible for government-funded aged care services, limiting options for proper local care. The only aged care that could take her was in Ballarat, an hour's drive from their Ararat home.
She's one of the younger generation that has this awful disease, and we don't have sufficient or enough facilities to cater for the younger people.
That was Lynn Russell, wellbeing advocate at the Ararat RSL. She met Ray when he attended a suicide prevention workshop that she facilitated. Ray says Lynn has been a foundation of support for him ever since, even helping him find Mickey a temporary daycare and then the aged care facility in Ballarat.
Because of Mickey, I started a diploma in dementia care. So I've been doing that online through the University of Tasmania, and that's been really helpful in understanding more about, you know, those who have dementia. So I'm often sending Ray material to read.
Lynn has also been instrumental in bringing Ray out of his darkness. She says Ray has completely come out of his shell after becoming involved in the RSL, taking over the running of the fortnightly chess and card games, as well as teaching Japanese at the University of the Third Age.
He's very chatty, loves to talk. He's been going to the local gym doing a heart health program. He's also bought a caravan, which, you know, is pride and joy. So we're encouraging to make sure that he does do some travel in the next few months.
In between visits to his wife in Ballarat, Ray tries to give back to the RSL and will be selling poppies ahead of Remembrance Day. He says prior to the support of the RSL, he was alone and cut off. But now he has newfound friendships and hobbies.
Everyone here at the Ararat RSL has just been outstanding. They really have. Always had my back.
That was Ray Sullivan finishing off that report by Charlotte Wilkes. And if you or anyone you know needs help, you can call Lifeline on 13 11 14. The unique coastline along northern WA is considered special for those who live by it, and keeping people safe in the waters is why many choose to volunteer for the marine rescue. In the Pilbara, women are joining more than ever before, making up almost half of some crews. Mietta Adams joined the Onslow Marine Rescue Team on a boat during a training exercise and filed this report.
On the choppy waters off WA's northern coast, Emily Island knows she's making a difference to her community. She's one of the marine rescue volunteers in Onslow, a quaint seaside town more than 1,300 kilometres north of Perth.
I think it's the best way to give back, especially in a small community when we have very minimal people and resources.
Volunteers across the Pilbara are learning new skills in this search and rescue training exercise, involving several marine rescue fleets, water police, the ABF and choppers. In this practice scenario, they're looking for a missing person at sea.
And we keep going till we find the person?
Yep, so we just keep doing grid search. Once we've done the search of this area, report that back. We're taking you approach.
Emily is also a volunteer firefighter, mother of two and has a full-time job.
You just feel good about it too. Like, you just show the kids that you don't have to always just do things because, you know, you earn lots of money or anything like that. You can do things and get a benefit out of it that's not, I guess, material.
Would you encourage other women to join?
100%. I think, like, we're getting more and more women each year, but the ratio between men and women is still very off. And, oh, anyone can do it. It's not about brute strength or super smart people or anything like that. It's literally just those who want to do it can do it.
The Pilbara is a male-dominated region. For example, in the Shire of East Pilbara, there are more than 272 men per 100 women. But you wouldn't know that looking at the marine rescue crews, where women make up 43% of crews in Exmouth and 40% in Port Hedland. Beck Benson, the Pilbara District Officer for the Department of Fire and Emergency Services, says it's not just entry-level positions women are taking up.
These women are getting in amongst it, learning all the same crew training, becoming senior skippers. We've had a couple of groups where the crew of the vessel that's gone out to do rescues has been solely women, you know, skipper and crew, taking the boats out and going and rescuing people. We've got a lot of women putting their hands up and taking on leadership roles with female commanders in charge of the entire group, female training officers that are running the training. They're finding a lot of joy and a lot of activity in those operational roles.
She says the demographic is generally younger than other regions too.
In the northwest, we don't have the retired workforce. Everyone's sort of in that more middle-aged range and essentially looking for stuff to do. There's not as much, you know, in our regional towns as there is, say, in the metro to occupy different activities, different hobbies and different interests. So I think marine rescue has become one of those opportunities for people that, A, embraces everyone's love for the ocean and the coastline up here, at the same time as helping the communities.
A senior skipper for the service in Port Hedland, Shelby Noble, says the skills she's learned has helped her become more assertive.
There is no reason that you should ever feel intimidated as a woman coming into one of the marine rescues. You learn so many different life skills. You know, you're learning how to handle a vessel, you're learning how to handle lines, tie knots, interact with the community.
One of Shelby's newest crew members is Denise Mackay, who only moved to Port Hedland 6 months ago from New Zealand.
There is no reason why women can't be as capable and competent at doing this kind of thing than men can be. And particularly in Port Hedland, they are really, really focused on helping anyone, regardless of your gender, who's keen and who wants to continue learning.
Pilbara reporter Mieta Adams with that story. Let's head to New South Wales now, where a small property outside of Armidale is the only place in the world where you'll find a critically endangered shrub. On Stephen Walkden Brown's property, the endangered Australasia rupestris is thriving, and now he's hoping his family can be its custodians for generations to come. Bridget Murphy has this story.
After about an hour of walking, ducking and manoeuvring through bushland on Stephen Walkden Brown's property, Loma Langi, a bright yellow cluster appears in the distance. We've spotted the critically endangered Australasia rupestris, specifically this flower's subspecies, recurva. Here near Armidale in the state's northern tablelands is the only place in the world where this plant grows. Stephen and his wife Yvonne bought the 200-hectare property in 2017. Unbeknownst to them, alongside its almost untouched bushland, it housed the critically endangered species. Ben Vincent is a senior regional conservation officer with the Biodiversity Conservation Trust. He says very little is known about the shrub.
It's critically endangered, and to get that listing, you have to be a plant with a very, very restricted geographic location. Of which this one has. It's probably about 600 metres in length along a creek line, and it also has to have very few mature individuals.
Although it's a small and relatively simple-looking plant from afar, Mr. Vincent says for those with a trained eye, it's striking.
The heart-shaped green leaves full of these little star-shaped hairs, which make it kind of a fluffy, light green appearance, and then there's, you know, beautiful, really obvious yellow flower. They really do stand out.
Mr. Vincent says despite its critical situation, there could be a prosperous future for the plant, with a survey this year showing good signs.
We were able to get out and resurvey the existing population and find the mature adults are about the same. So that's great. It means they're persisting well. But the exciting news was to see, I think we counted about over 600. So that's a great outcome. And these guys are, you know, they're probably 20 or 30 centimetres tall. So the point there is that they've been in the landscape now for probably 4 or 5 years and persisting well. So it's a good news story for this critically endangered species.
As part of his work with the state's Biodiversity Conservation Trust, Stephen receives funding to do his part caring for the plants.
We do notice that some of them are being nibbled, and we do have deer up on this block, and there's feral goats as well. And so we are obliged to try and control those species, which pose some kind of threat potentially to the plant, although they have coexisted up here for quite a while.
Just like Stephen and Yvonne inherited the beautiful endangered species, they also hope to pass it on, ensuring the plant is cared for in the future.
Got one of our children lives in Armidale and has a number of kids, so you know, we would like this to pass on through the family after we've gone.
Bridget Murphy reporting there from Armidale in New South Wales.
You're listening to Australia Wide. On ABC Radio.
And finally here on Australia Wide. In 2007, Tasmanian sailor Ken Gourlay became the fastest Australian to sail solo around the world. Now, his son is aiming to break his long-standing record. Northern Tasmania reporter Hayden Smith has their story.
So that's the thing, if this East Coast low forms here, they're sort of saying about here at the moment, but it could be anywhere.
The final preparations for an epic journey, two decades in the making. Later this week, Launceston sailor Tristan Gourlay will attempt to become the fastest Australian to sail solo, non-stop and unassisted around the world.
Something I've always wanted to do, ever since a young kid sailing dinghies in the river here. I see it as one of the pinnacles of sailing, and it's a good tough challenge, and I'd really like to give it a go.
Almost 20 years ago, Tristan watched in awe as his father, Ken Gourlay, returned to Tasmania a hero after sailing around the world in 179 days. Now, Tristan aims to break his dad's long-standing record. This 22,000 nautical mile journey will be his greatest challenge to date.
The sheer length of time out on the water, and which is actually one thing I'm looking forward to, is that solitude for 150 days to see how I handle it myself. I've done a lot of shorter things and spent a lot of time by myself, but not this long time. So certainly those other races have prepared me a lot more for it, and I do know a lot more about myself. So hopefully all the experience will count when the time comes to it.
Tristan and his yacht, Blue Moon 2, will leave Hobart later this week. If all goes to plan, he'll return in early April next year. He's loading the yacht with more than 500 litres of drinking water, stockpiles of long-life food, and some treats, courtesy of his mother.
Mum's looked after me. There's quite a few little treats there, little chocolate bars, and little snacks and bits and pieces, which are needed. You know, sometimes you do just need it, just to get something in to keep going for another hour or two, and until you can settle the boat down and then have your break and come down and have a decent feed.
When the weather proves challenging, Tristan finds solace in playing music throughout his cabin.
I was doing a Melbourne to Vanuatu race and we got hit by a 40-knot front. So we'd sort of shorten all the sails and everything's blustery away and it's sort of coming on dark. And I turn around and cranked Enuron flat out. And just that classical soothing music just put a whole new spin on the scene and actually sort of made it a bit more pleasant. It took a bit of worry away, something to distract you. So music will be one thing, certainly calling home and just having a quick chat with them.
At 70, Ken Gourlay's sailing days are largely behind him. He believes his son has what it takes to break the record.
The most important thing, and I'm sure Tristan's got it, is the absolute wish to do it. You've got to want to do it. There's plenty of times where you get an opportunity to say, no, this is all too hard, or I'm getting bored, I don't want to do it, I've done enough. So having to that urgent it's wish to do it, it's 50% sailing, 50% psychological. Now, Tristan can certainly sail the course. There's no problem. He has the skills, he has the ability, so he can certainly sail the course. And I believe he's got that wish to do it as well, which will carry him through probably the harder or the lonelier times.
The Tasmanian sailing legend downplayed any talk of a father-son rivalry.
Not really. People have said, oh, how do you feel about if Tristan does take your record off you? What could a man want better than his own son to do that? So, no, I'm quite happy.
Sailing legend Ken Gourlay ending that story by Northern Tasmania reporter Hayden Smith. And that is Australia Wide for this Monday. I'm Alex Hyman. Thanks so much for your company. Have a wonderful evening. Cheerio.
ABC Listen.